serious problems and administering that institution, and that they will not go away. He says, I just think that he's made a mistake, and that he can rectify it, and that everything will be all right. And I said, I didn't think so. He was quite determined that that was the case. End of that discussion.
One further question. We have had, in subsequent years, many complaints about the layers of the bureaucracy and how difficult it has been to get decisions, and the extent to which the initiative for the establishment of Stony Brook gradually was transferred from the central office to the locality. And with the locality beginning to push for its perceived growth direction farther and faster than those in the central office seemed to either understand or prefer or be happy with. What can you say about your difficulties, if any, or the support you got from the central office in the establishment of the center?
I would say that for the most part I received support, that there was very little attempt on the part of the central office to control my activities, other than by requiring me to submit budgets and get approval of those budgets. But I never had an appointment turned down. I never had a request for funds turned down. I never had anybody from the central office calling me and telling me what to do. I was left almost entirely on my own. I could consult with them, and I did. I frequently consulted with Charlie Foster regarding business matters. But
how about Dave Price? Was he there?
No. Or if he was there, I had nothing to do with it.
He was vice president for personnel when I was there.
I vaguely recall the name, but I don't know him, and I never had anything to do with him.
Did you have any alter egos there with whom you could talk philosophy of the
institutional
philosophy?
Not really. When I had problems about difficulties I might be having, I could talk with John Slocum, but John Slocum was a very good listener and very little inclined to give me advice as to what to do.
Did he know? What was his background?
His background, he had his PhD was in business economics or something like that from Cornell.
I see.
I think he did his undergraduate work in Chicago, and that, well, I think so. I'm not sure of that. Anyway, he knew people at Chicago as I did. He knew Reuben Froden as I did. So I talked with him, but there was never any attempt on his part to tell me what to do, or even, as a matter of fact, to advise me what to do.
What about what about your connections with the education department? Was Joe Nyquist from Chicago?
I know him as Wally Nyquist.
Wally.
And he was a classmate of mine at Chicago. We had both both been members of the Senior Honor Society, so we got to know one another there, so I knew him. But I had not had any contact with him after our undergraduate days until I came to Albany. So I had not any contact with him in between those times.
Are you 5'8"?
Pardon?
Are you 5'8"?
No.
I got the impression, or have the impression, that Allen...
Jim Allen?
That Jim Allen was a broad-gauged educator with sufficient breadth to appreciate and work with the people in the central office of the State University without being antagonistic.
My experience would be in accord with that. I met with him and numerous members of the education department and with people around the state at a meeting that he called in his offices in Albany. And there was some discussion at that meeting of the need for extending the facilities of the State University to meet the needs of New York, but those needs were being conceived almost exclusively in terms of business needs. And so I proceeded to point out that the matter of needs was a subtle matter, that needs could be interpreted in various ways, and that the State of New York needed more educated citizens, and they needed better philosophers, they needed better economists, and they needed better physicists, and the needs extended across all areas of the university. After the meeting was over, Jim Allen came up to me and said that he was happy to see somebody with that kind of interest involved in the State University of New York, which obviously indicated that he too was sympathetic with that kind of conception of the role of the university.
He probably felt somewhat alone.
Yes. I dare say.
Rockefeller was Phi Beta Kappa from Dartmouth. And I had the feeling that where education was concerned, he had a broad conception of the needs of society. Well, I think we've covered about everything that I can think of, so let me take these. And I appreciate very much your frankness and willingness to come over here, particularly in view of the fact that you have a cold.
Well, I think I'm about over it.
Good. That's good. All right.
Well, I have only the interest of seeing the history of the institution reported as accurately as possible.
I think there are people who feel that Stony Brook and UCSD are the two outstanding examples of the development of higher public education since World War II. And it just so happens that while I was in San Diego, I had the opportunity to talk with Roger Revelle, who was the real founder of San Diego from its initial condition as the Scripps Institute of Oceanography, of which he was director, and one of the five colleges that they have established is named for him, Revelle College. That's the college that has the science orientation. But he was determined to have Scripps Institute broadened in terms of graduate work in all the sciences, and then also in terms of humanities and the social sciences, and with an undergraduate college gradually added. He's quite a man.
Okay.
Yeah.